passe un volant pas possible. Un artiste, super, encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot.
Sagolsen. Sagolsen setter det hen. Han setter den. De I semifinale igjen.
It's a sad day for handball. The luscious locks of Mikkel Hansen are hanging up there, headband, and setting off into the sunset after the Olympics this summer. That was the news that came through. We'll be discussing that among many other things that are going on in the handball world. Welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. It's myself, Alex Kulesh, and I'm joined by Chris O'Reilly. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, Alex. I'm good. Just something that sprung to my mind there, as you said, the news coming through. It reminded me of when a royal member of the royal family dies in the UK, and it's like the news anchor. That was you now. Is this how big this is? What a royal person dying for the Brits, Mikkel Hansen retiring is for the handball world.
I think Mikkel Hansen is absolutely a handball royalty. He is.
Oh yes, very good.
The face of the generation that we're in, you know, living in Denmark as well for many years. He kind of transcended the sport in the country, at least in and broadly across the world. I think a lot of people are able to look at Mikkel Hansen and say, oh yeah, that guy's plays handball or something, which you can't say for many handball players in this world. You know, then if you pluck someone from the street, it's like Mikkel Hansen's probably the most likely player that they'll recognize. And maybe it's due to his looks, but looks being his hair and his persona and his boring character, which we might get into a bit as well. but you can't deny that he's the top of the sport.
Here I am in Montpellier, and so my Google search is a little bit skewed towards France, but putting Mikkel Hansen and going to news and seeing that he's got headlines in L'Équipe, in Le Parisien, on the Olympics website, you know, so it is a great example of someone who has transcended the sport. The fact that his retirement notice has hit all of these news agencies, and yeah, it's big news. It hasn't come as any surprise, though. I think it was announced on Wednesday afternoon. Already on Tuesday, there were a fair few tweets going out about it. TV2, nothing gets past TV2 in Danish handball these days, and they were ahead of the news. And I think I don't know where should we start with this, because it feels like there's a lot to unpack here.
There's definitely a lot, but you mentioned you checked out the news, so I just did the same on my phone to see what news stories pop up about Mikkel Hansen. And this story from, I think it's a Russian or a Belarusian newspaper online, which really took me. The title is, "Good News, Mikkel Hansen Beat Depression. Free pass." That was the news story after the break he took and came back from it.
Good news.
So with that news, I posted on our social media to kind of gauge and the standing of Mikkel Hansen in the world. So I put out, you know, top what player in the world. And to my surprise, it ranged to top 10. And that is probably surprising for me, that, you know, he's as low as top 10, top 15 in some answers. There's a lot, of course, that, you know, really top three, top five was probably the most common answer, but I feel that's underselling Mikkel Hansen's legacy. I don't know what it is. For a player who, you know, he's had one of the best international tournament careers, I think. He has 4 world championships, one European championship, and an Olympic gold. And there's if you, you have to exclude the French players from this, but I think he's right at the top. If you exclude France, he's right at the top. You know, he's with the kind of Bengen boys as in terms of honors, and especially that run that, you know, he's still currently on, I would say. 2019 World Championship, 21 World Championship, 20 Olympics, 2016 Olympics, sorry, 2019 World Championship, 21 World Championship, and then another World Championship in 2023, which has come at like a really late stage in his career. It's quite a strange career trajectory for a player who was touted so highly. It was really the latter stages of his career where he reached his peaks at international level.
I think with, you know, the top 10 stuff, I mean, it very much comes down to people's personal preferences. And there are so many great players that, like, could, that some people would say, and hard to argue with, like, no, these people are number 1, 2, 3, 4, and still not get to Mikkel Hansen. But I think that's where maybe like top five is probably the fairest thing. And then once you're into the top five, we had our greatest team of all time discussion, remember, which was great fun. But and he was very much in the conversation there. So in that sense, very much top 10. I guess for some people, it was the defending that we talked about. The probably the last time we talked about Mikkel Hansen was about his terrible defending in the Euro final. But when it comes to his international success, and you mentioned there about France and how French players kind of are in a different league. Just look at the rise of the Danish men's national handball team. And before 2008, when they won that first Euro gold, there was very little to shout about for this team. They had won bronze in 2007, and the only other medal that was a silver or gold was in 1967. So they got a couple of bronzes, but finally broke through in 2008. And since then, it has been, you know, the Mikkel Hansen team. And it hasn't just been him. Of course, it's Niklas Landin. There's been all the legends that have come and gone. But two players have been part of that team, basically throughout the generation, Hansen and Landin. And so that really does say a lot about how they brought this team to a whole new level.
There's one thing that, you know, people pick on defending. And I see this actually across a lot of sports. Basketball is one that it always comes around. So there's the, you know, the offensive side, there's the scoring, there's the defending. But a lot of time the playmaking is something that doesn't really get a mention as a overall additional skill. It kind of falls into attack. But I think Mikkel Hansen, the way he developed as a player, really the playmaking is what set him apart. The way he could just stand there and make every defender on the opposing side terrified just because Mikkel Hansen has the ball. His wrist, his shot is unique. He's influenced the sport with his style. His, you know, we see it with someone like Skipper Goto, that there's this kind of, okay, get the ball, survey the area, and have so many weapons at hand, whether it's a shot, it's a pass, or into the line, into the wing, just a quick pass. All of that is under full control with Mikkel Hansen, to an extent where actually when Denmark played with a player up, they just scored every single time. Every single time, just because he had some of the best decision-making and precision passing that we've ever seen. And, you know, maybe that kind of standing style is not completely new. Ivana Balic is always someone who got brought up in this discussion with Mikkel Hansen, and I don't want to ruffle feathers, but Mikkel Hansen clears Ivana Balic in every category for me.
What comes to mind when I think of Mikkel Hansen is him floating around 9 meters and just whipping a shot into the top corner. And just that is in a way that nobody else can do on as regular a basis as him. He kind of set he set the trend in that regard for players being able to do that. And that is something that has also, like, he's also redeveloped his career, because that's the kind of thing that sticks in our mind. But he was able to do everything at a given time. But and that is also something which I think somebody commented on either on Twitter or on Instagram in response to your question about he is the top whatever, but like how he's reinvented himself as well and stayed relevant up to the point of the final minutes of that Euro final, where he was still very relevant to that game in the attack, is very remarkable. 36 now, he has won everything internationally with the national team. He has gotten all of the individual awards, 3-time IHF World Player of the Year, 3-time Handball Planet Player of the Year, which is almost more important at this stage. MVPs everywhere, all-time top scorer in the Olympics, All-Star left back, All-Star playmaker, Champions League, European Championship, World Championship. But he, a couple of years ago, moved to Aalborg. And, this is his second season with Aalborg, right? Second and last season with Aalborg. Am I not mistaken? Yeah.
It is, yes.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, it's so strange. I really felt like he was there for longer. But of course, that Aalborg team that made the Final Four was just before he arrived.
Yeah. And so, because the news was out for longer that he was going to join the team.
He signed a year in advance.
And I remember when he signed that we had the discussion about his age and the age he was going to be when he finally joined them, which was 34, and whether he would still be able to have an impact for the team. And I think that's probably the only area of this where there's going to be like a twofold disappointment. Number one, that he wasn't able to have the impact on Aalborg that everyone hoped he would. But massively, that he's going to end his career, perhaps, unless Aalborg do the business this season. He could well finish his career without winning a Champions League title, which is absolutely bonkers.
It is, and I was looking through it, and you have to think back to that PSG team. I think that's also part of his career. So his international career is definitely one of the greatest we've ever seen, but on the club side, it's a little bit strange. You know, he starts off in Denmark, then gets the big move to Barcelona, and pretty much gets discarded a little bit early, but also with AG Copenhagen coming through, he was an obvious signing for them, and he left to join a seriously ambitious project. So you wouldn't, it's not like he failed in Barcelona. I think he would have definitely continued and gone to great lengths with that club, but AG Copenhagen came up and it was this big, shiny, cool new thing, sleeveless handball jerseys, DJs in the stands, a handball match in Parken Football Stadium, all of this rock and roll handball early in his career. And he really, you know, he enjoyed great success there. That part of his career was fantastic. He, you know, won the Danish championship a couple of times, reached the Final Four. Still all early in his career. And then comes the move to PSG after that comes crashing down, really only 3 years of AG Copenhagen before comes crashing down. And he spends 10 years in this PSG team.
He was the OG PSG player.
He was.
He moved there before anyone else did.
He's actually just traveled from one ambitious project to another. AG Copenhagen, then PSG kicked that off, and then now in Aalborg, where he ends his career. And he spent these 10 years in PSG that, you know, he was a little bit hidden to the world. While the French League was, you know, really at the top for many years, you could, you know, some of those years where he won the championship constantly were against very, very impressive Montpellier and Nantes teams as well. You can't disregard that. And the closest he came there's three Champions League third places. So he has a whole bag full of bronze medals, but it was that 2016 final versus Vardar, the miracle of 2016-17 mm-hmm. season, where there was the miracle of Vardar, where they won in the final against PSG by just one goal, 24-23. Mikkel Hansen was incredible in the tournament. He was second top scorer in the overall competition. And that PSG team was just such a juggernaut. You know, Gensheimer, Karabatic, and Hansen. Aumier in goals, and they still couldn't get it done. And it does leave a bit of a sour taste on the career, for sure. That inability to grab that Champions League win. But, you know, many players have faced that in their careers, where just the randomness of the Champions League, the randomness of the Final Four has come to it. So I still, it's still an incredibly successful club career. He's done almost it all. Never played in the Bundesliga. That
was what I was going to ask there. Is like, is that another one, that the fact that he didn't go to the Bundesliga? I remember when Sandus Augustsson made the move to Kiel, I was like, now that's one. He's got one up on Hansen now in the books. Little did I know then that Norway would be such a disappointment for so many years to come.
That's it.
And that is like, that's something we'll look back on the other side. I mean, like, yeah, unless
if he did go to the Bundesliga, do you think his international career could have panned out exactly like it did with the three world championships?
Maybe not.
Where, you know, he could have been beaten down, destroyed, and injured, and unable to like take the full load of the Danish team in that period. And, you know, what if you ask them, what would you trade, the World Championships or Bundesliga? Hey, he could have said both, but I'm sure he'll be happy with those gold medals.
When it comes to the fans who love him most, which will be the Danish fans, what will live long in their memory will be what he's done for the national team. That's what the legends of a given nation are remembered by. It'll be the same for Karabatic in France. The fact that he hasn't won a title with PSG, hasn't won the Champions League title with PSG, won't be held against him. You know, he's done it with Barca, he's done it with Montpellier, with Kiel. Yeah, I think it is the Danish national team stuff that'll stay with us.
And I think that 2019 World Championship was one of the greatest championships from a player we've ever seen.
Yeah.
He was top scorer by far, 72 goals in the competition. He was the MVP, and he just had his first child, and it's that whole kind of father bounce that we have seen in sport, where he looked like a completely different like being in that tournament. The control, the way he just completely controlled every game, from goals to assists to the tempo to just dominating fully. And that Danish team, it was their first World Championship as well. Now they're spoiled with three, but it meant so much for that Danish team. And he absolutely put them on their back and took it home.
You look at the final weekend there, you know, they smacked France by 8 goals. He scored 12. They smacked Norway by 9 goals. He top scored with 7 in that game. 19 goals in the final weekend. And yeah, I just remember we were absolutely creaming ourselves when talking about Mikkel Hansen and that tournament in 2019. It was his very best. Whether a player has dominated a world championship like that, it'll be the next time we see it will probably be when Henny Rijkaard does it at some point. Which he's probably come close enough to it at that point, but yeah, I don't see a male player doing that, being so single-handedly better than everyone else and driving a team to glory. So are we forgiving him for not winning the Champions League and not going to the Bundesliga then? Is that what I'm getting out of this?
I fully forgive him for all of that. Yeah. I think for me personally as well, I caught the Karabatic era a little bit, but I didn't see him in his Kiel days to his full extent, where he was that just dominant player. I've seen kind of the more mature Karabatic, seen bits of Ivana Balic, and just clips of the former legends like, you know, Talon Dushabaev, Jackson Richardson, and the others. So for me, Mikkel Hansen is the greatest player I've ever watched fully. And I've watched his full career unfold and kind of been through the peaks with him. So for me, he really just excites me like no other player. And I don't think you can argue as for Mikkel Hansen to be above Karabatic in the standings, just because Karabatic is, he's like the Michael Jordan, where like you can argue for in any sort of way, and Karabatic has the answer. He has the titles, he has the goals, he has the defense, he has everything. So it's unlikely that we'll ever see a kind of a resume stack up to Karabatic's, but that doesn't mean that what Mikkel Hansen has done is not just otherworldly and just beautiful. His whole handball style is just so unique, so graceful that, hey, it's been a joy to watch. And we will still get a little bit more. We have the rest of the season. Aalborg are still in the chase. Imagine, you know, imagine Mikkel Hansen coming away with a Champions League title and then an Olympic gold, taking down Karabatic in a final in their last ever games. Now, that would be, you know, that would rival Messi's World Cup win and sail into the sunset.
And that's it. Aalborg waiting for Veszprém in the quarterfinals. PSG, in order to get to that, will have to beat Barca, which, not impossible. Not impossible, but will be tough. And yeah, it's... Yeah, it's hard to know with the Aalborg team. I haven't seen enough to convince me that they'll do it over two legs. They've shown, you know, everything, every level from fantastic to disastrous at different points this season. It'll be a good battle with Veszprém, and maybe the fact that he has announced his retirement at this point will be a real boost for this Aalborg team. It'll be, you know, we're doing it for him. We're doing it for Miguel. That'll give them something a bit extra.
On the other side, just a word on Karabatic. We still haven't done Karabatic's eulogy, which we will do. I think that deserves a whole episode in itself.
Probably after the Olympics itself.
Maybe after the Olympics. We'll see. But there was also that news that PSG are going to have a farewell party for him. The game is going to be played in the final game of the season. I think will be played in the Accord Arena in Paris in front of 15,000 people to be his kind of true swan song to at least the club game and the club, which he definitely deserves. And makes me think, why don't PSG do that more often and not play more games in the bigger arena instead of their shitty half-sized hall.
Yeah, particularly for, like, you know, a quarterfinal against Barcelona. I mean, could you ask for a better occasion? Like, what the Parisian fans would be all over it. And it's a great arena. I was there for the Women's Euro in 2018, and the atmosphere was absolutely electric. It was fantastic. So, yeah, that would have been a great opportunity, but not to be. But they will get to probably celebrate the French League title there. And a nice farewell on the club side for him if they don't get to Cologne. It's just going to be such a big farewell party, these Olympic Games. Like, there's many players.
Well, there's also...
Joan Cadeas has retired as well. I don't know if that's with immediate effect. Even if it is with immediate effect, he's definitely going to be dragged out for the Olympics. I mean,
making that squad.
There's only one way. And Narea Peña as well is retired. And that after not being able to come back from the plethora of injuries she's had. But you do feel like there's a lot of players out there who are just waiting for these Olympics to be their last chance.
We said that last Olympics, and then Vera Mara, she's playing for Spain again.
The Spanish team, yeah. I mean, yeah, but I mean, it's people with sense, you know. I think, and you know, for some players, you know, I saw Diego Simeone again today. Someone like him, it could be a good time to bow out with Argentina. The Croatians, like Courtney asked me if I reckon Dovniak also, but he's got a home world championship next January, so I reckon that'll be the last one for him. But yeah, there will be a few. But the fact that, and Stina Oftedal in the women's side, going to be her farewell as well. So there's some real goats,
yeah,
saying goodbye in Paris, which is it's going to be maybe emotional. It's the end of an era.
I think so, and it really, really leaves room for the next generation to step into. We haven't really seen it yet. Especially like Mikkel Hansson and Karabatic are still the faces of handball. In a lot of ways, you have, you know, they're the players who are right in front of the media at World Championships. They're the most in demand. And they will be gone. And we're just waiting for someone to really step in and take over that, you know, face of handball mantle. And, you know, hopefully that new player, whether it's Matthias Gisel or Deacon Mem or whoever the space is left for, has a bit more charisma.
Well, I think Deacon Mem and Mem and Gisel have already more charisma than what Karabatic and Hansson have shown. Like Gisel, I think, is really in January really is beginning to show that he knows that he has to start playing the game, and he's very good with media. And yeah, I think that, like, we talked about the Mem versus Gisel tradition, now tradition, right? Yeah. That's gonna be the next tradition. And that is a really fun one as well, because there's something more, I don't know, quick and explosive in a different way about the players that are coming through now. The players are getting smaller in a way. Players are getting faster. They're doing more funky things. It's all trends, right? Things go in different ways. But there's definitely a new trend in the sport towards explosiveness and trickery that I think will be quite exciting to see. And will be good in terms of forming new stars in the sport, because their personalities are coming out in the way they play as well. That's quite exciting, but it is leaves a big vacuum to be filled, and it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, and it's up to like the media to be honest, to actually start building that. You know, we've started talking about the Gisel rivalry. But that's not a thing. You know, every championship, yeah. That's how it should start. Like the comparison of these players, you know, they should be put in front of the cameras. They should be trash talking each other. All of this, you know, give them the opportunity to make an impact. And it's something that handball is not great at.
And it can be done really easily. I mean, the latest example of that, which is kind of just you speaking about it, reminds me that I have been kind of engrossed by it. The women's March Madness in basketball.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. The two like outstanding players facing off in the quarterfinals, even, not even in the final four. But that was all over my social media, to the point where I was like, all right, turning on the VPN, getting YouTube TV. We're watching the Iowa versus LSU games. Never watched a women's basketball game in my life, but now I was like, oh yeah, this is actually, yeah, I'm here for it. So it can be done, and it can transcend like countries, and it is just like you just have to look to the ESPN socials and the people, like the journalists and the fans, and it really, they jump on these things so well, and just push it until you just accept that it's there.
Exactly. And that has to be done. We'll start doing it. Let's see if anyone follows. I'm getting my hot take Twitter keys out. I'm ready to start stirring
shit. Get those burner accounts charged up. Well, as you said, there's still a long way to go this season. There's still a lot of opportunities for them to add a bit more glory, both for club and country, before their careers end. We're talking on Wednesday night, late on Wednesday night, here in Europe, after we had some proper knockout handball again between Zagreb and Montpellier. And I have to say, these two teams really delivered in a round where there's not much delivery. These teams really, they gave us what we needed. Does your knockout handball soul feel filled?
It had the like bare minimum hit. One out of four games that ended up with some drama. And it had the drama. You were at the game, of course. But, you know, Zagreb didn't make it easy. They, you know, coming into the second half, they were up and looking dangerous, but then Montpellier kind of turned on the gas and closed them out. What drove that kind of final performance for Montpellier?
Really good coaching. Patrice Canet, in his last season with the club, took a brave time out early in the half. Like, you know, you could really feel that it was necessary. The atmosphere had gotten really dodgy. Even at halftime, they were level, but they were not comfortable by any means. There was a lot of similarities from the first leg, kind of raising their ugly head from a Montpellier perspective. Most notably them missing their 100% shots, like their counterattack opportunities, and Mate Mandic making some wonderful saves. And yeah, they were looking comfortable, Zagreb, looking confident, and Montpellier fixed the defense. They focus with Konan and Monte just playing in defense, and they're bringing Simone into the backcourt and attack only with Stash Scuba. And finally, I don't know if it was so much a tactical side of things or just like a psychological thing where they allowed themselves to be bulking in a way. They allowed themselves to go out and hit them hard over and over again. And quickly, they got a couple of turnovers, got a couple of easy goals, and they were stopping Serna from shooting. And once Serna got a little bit nervous about shooting, Zagreb fell apart. Miloš Kos got injured, so they lost the other big shooter. Klaritsa seemed to have a damaged right hand from the first half. He didn't feel like shooting. They went 7-on-6 Zagreb, which was a complete disaster, because then it was like, oh no, we definitely can't shoot. We have to win a penalty or they're going to score an empty goal. And it's like, this is the worst group. This is the worst team to force that upon. Because in the end, they, I think besides the defense, it was the fact that Montpellier had Stash Scuba as their playmaker and Zagreb didn't have a definitive playmaker in the classic sense.
Yeah. And also this Zagreb team is quite strong. A few really good players have come out, but one area that's not their strength is line players. And that 7-on-6, there was a number of incidences where it was just straight up drop ball up the other side, empty net goal. And it kind of worked, but you know, they just didn't have the passers or the catchers to make it work. So
two of the basic fundamental things in handball. Zagreb can shoot, they can save, they can hit, but passing and catching
not very good.
Not the best. So it took a while. It took a good hour and 45 minutes of handball for Montpellier to finally figure out what they needed to do. Yeah, they had the better team over the two legs, and deserved to go through. I think Zagreb can't be too disappointed in the end with the way that second leg went. They lost by 6 in the end, which is a little bit harsh. We got to see Zlatko Horvat going right back for a while, which is what I was waiting for. But yeah, I think, you know, Zagreb can bow out of this season's Champions League with their heads held high, and with a decent future ahead of them. If they can keep you know, Koss and Serna, Claritza, Mandic.
Yeah,
and I think they're future of this team.
Yeah, and they extended the contracts for Mandic, Claritza, and Koss, I believe, for a couple of years. So they are committed to this team. It'll be interesting to see if they actually strengthen it further. I haven't seen too many rumors going around if any players are going to join them. But it could be an interesting few years for the Zagreb team. The other game, Kielce beating GOG. GOG really just lying down in this tie and letting the better team go through. But I think the one thing to point out is that Alex Dushibayev was tremendous across both legs. He had a very slow start to the season, and it kind of combined with Kielce's injury woes and just trouble, especially kind of that mid section of the season. Kielce were bad, Alex Dushibayev was bad, and that's the way it usually works. If Alex is not firing, neither are Kielce, but he's gradually made it in. He's averaging 8 goals over the last 4 games in the Champions League. Got 16 in 2 games against GOG, and that will be really promising for Kielce, who, you know, looked like they were going to struggle, but made it through with absolutely no problem. Their team is kind of back. Wolf is in. Karolek is back in. Simon Sichko is still the main player they're missing, but it's okay with Danny Dushibayev there filling in at left back. So it's all looking pretty good for Kielce now. Tomasz Gimbala as well, back shoring up that defense. So they're ready to mount a challenge. Only issue is they're facing off against Magdeburg in the next round.
The best team in the world right now. Yeah, but what a quarterfinal. That's going to be the repeat of the final from last season. I won't count Kielce out just yet. Kielce have the first leg at home, and that could be big, because Kielce, I just always think back to when they smacked PSG at home in that first leg, 9 goals, and they could always pull off something special with the first leg at home.
The other ties are pretty much set, unless something insane happens in the...
I guess we'll record again if that's something
we will
insane
record
happens.
If something insane happens, but Veszprém likely through, as you said, playing Aalborg in the next round. PSG will likely get the business done against Visa Plock, setting up a tasty tie against Barcelona. So that is a quarter final matchup for a set of matchups for the ages, I have to say. Kielce Magdeburg, Barca PSG, Veszprém versus Aalborg, and even Kiel Montpellier. I think Montpellier are definitely ready to make some impact in that game against Kiel. So really, really interesting, and we better fucking get some good knockout handball in the quarterfinal, or I'm just giving up on this sport.
If it's not at least 3 out of 4, then yeah, it'll be pretty sad. But I find it hard to imagine that not being the case. Can we talk a little European League before we go? Because the boys from Sävehof with their little little ultras, young teams and young players, even younger players probably than the ultras. Yeah, they beat Hannover Burgdorf by 9 goals at home in the second leg and knocked them out, which is properly remarkable. Like this can't be underestimated. A Sävehof team, which in Europe over the last few years have been a kind of a fun team to watch, but never really looked like doing much damage, had lost their best player over the summer in Elias Elofsson Ashipaga to and yet have somehow done even better in Europe this season and have booked a quarterfinal spot against Flensburg.
Ah, it's great. All I can imagine is the director of Sävehof just pulling his hair out, wishing for his players to stop being so good so they don't have to lose money again.
We're losing another 20 grand.
Fucking bastards. Little bastards. Stop being so good at handball. Put down the ball, Felix Müller.
The Müller brothers, Felix and Simon, and their dad who tackled Ferdinand Melic in the main round. They're probably leaving at the end of the season.
Felix Müller is signed for Aalborg, so he's going there at the end of the season. I think Simon Müller's still around. And you know, the big piece that they are going to lose is of course Mikkel Appelgren, their coach. It really, you know, you have to look at this as another diamond in the crown of Mikkel Appelgren, that he's been able to achieve so much with this type of team, such a young kind of a team that just shouldn't be in this stage of the competition. When you look at the other teams in the quarterfinal, you know, they're playing Flensburg. Like, if you imagine the budgets of these teams, it's a whole different ball game. There's Dinamo Bucharesti, who are trying to buy every player on the planet. Nantes, Füchse Berlin, Sporting, Rhein-Neckar Löwen, and of course Skjern, the biggest small club in the world. But you know, maybe not. Maybe Sävehof is the biggest small club in the world.
Well, yeah, that's funny. In Sävehof, their advertisement in the arena is the biggest handball club in the world because they apparently have the most players from top to bottom. So they take a different approach to it. A great stat I saw from Rasmus Boysen on Twitter, and this really puts their achievement in like a Swedish context into perspective. Sävehof are only the second Swedish team to beat a German club in a knockout game, home and away, in European club competitions. The first was Red Bergslid, who, by the way, the legendary club have been relegated to the third league in Sweden recently. They beat Lemgo in the semi-final of the Cup Winners' Cup in 2002-2003. So some long-awaited success for the Swedish teams. And yeah, Seged fans licking their lips. Mikkel Appelgren on his way. And I'm sure over the course of time, some of those players also joining him. Olli Mitton comes to mind. And yeah, that's going to be a different ball game. You know, he's had Elverum. He's done a great job with them. Sävehof done a great job with them. And straight into the, you know, probably one of the most underachieving teams in Europe from the last decade in Seged. But they've got a good man.
That quarterfinal lineup in the European League, you know, many of these teams could be in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Füchse Berlin, Nantes. What a game that is going to be.
This is European League gold, you know. This is classic matches, classic teams. And yeah, in another world, well, next season in the Champions League. Yeah, that's a great one. Is that's the one that stands out for you, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. The others, you know, Sporting versus Rhein-Neckar Löwen is interesting. Rhein-Neckar Löwen did the job against Nexa. You know, I kind of liked this Nexa team for a while, and then I looked at their squad, and they're kind of, you know, they're very similar to the old Wisla Plotsk or the old Zagreb, where they have a bunch of owl lads, whereas Marko Bezek, top scorer for them in that second leg against Rhein-Neckar Löwen. But yeah, they sailed through. You know, Sporting, we've talked about how great they are. Dinamo Bucharesti also flexed their muscles. Really going to be an interesting matchup, but it could be a top final four. And, you know, only two out of the eight teams are German. You know, we might only see one German team in the final four.
It's three.
Three. Füchse Berlin are just own entity.
I know Flensburg can't as Danish these days.
Three, but okay, maybe there'll be two.
Two in the final four? In the
final four.
You reckon? Yeah.
It's not as clear-cut, I think.
Yeah, all of them would be fun, that's for sure. Like Dinamo Skjern, I think, has the makings of a just wacky pair of legs. both teams with their ups and downs. So
quick one on Bjørnbro Silkeborg, because they lost to Dynamo Bucharesti, but I just realized that that is just the retirement home for Danish legends at the moment. Lauge Schmidt in there. He's not that old, actually, 32, but he's leading that team. Beside him, Nikolai Uris on right back with his big beard. What's he? 37 years old. They brought in, you know, just to shore things up, Morten Olsen at his grand age to join that team. René Toft Hansen on the line. The Sjöstrand in goal as well. Remember Sjöstrand, mm-hmm. former Kiel goalkeeper? Yeah. Just a bunch of legends, you know, put them together. And
you know who's joining next season? Nikolai Lesa from Porto and Anders Zachariasen from Gog.
Oh, lovely. Zachariasen and Morten Olsen are just...
It's like the Masters team, you
know? It is the Masters
team. Proper, like, Masters team. Just, you know, in some leagues, they go for, you know, an under-20 national team playing in the National League for whatever reason, like, to help development. Whereas in Denmark, they're working on having a world-class Masters team for the over-35s next year, letting them play in the top league. I think that'll do it, then, for this podcast. And... we'll have a morning club coming out shortly as well, where we'll look at the MVP race for the Champions League. That's always a fun little discussion. But until then, from Alex and myself, it's goodbye.